Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Quaker Matters podcast. On today's episode, we hear from longtime athletic director, teacher, and coach, Bob Tattersall. In this episode, Coach T discusses his decision to join the Friends community in 1968, the characteristics of a successful coach and athletic director, and what it's been like to share the Wilmington Friends school experience with his children and grandchildren. We hope you enjoy.
We always tried to follow the idea that the team concept was more important than the individual, and that the student came before the player.
Hey, Coach. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, I'm really excited to talk to you about your career. So let's start. Let's go back to after graduating from William Penn High School. You attended the University of Delaware, and you actually coached middle school football, basketball, and JV baseball at Friends during your time as an undergraduate student. So my first question, was teaching and coaching something that you always knew you wanted to do?
It was my senior year, going to be going into my senior year. And the head of the department, Ken Steers, the phys ed department, got a phone call and was calling down. And the headmaster here, Charles Hutton, was looking for somebody to come up and be a part-time coach. So I the toughest thing for me was I had to go to Tubby Raymond, who was also the baseball coach then, and say, Tubby, I'm not playing next year. I got this great offer. I'm going to get paid $80 a month for 10 months, coach three sports. I thought that sounds like a pretty good deal. And so that's how it started. So it was just that last year. And then having done that, did the middle school football with Bill Hoffman, who was our business manager at the time. And he felt really good about putting me in charge of a lot of things. And then did basketball, both teams, seventh grade, eighth grade, by myself, and then did JV baseball. So they offered me a job. But at that time, a buddy of mine, Larry Pratt, and I were coming out together, and we were offered the job at the Colonial School District, William Penn, to put in five elementary schools. We were to put in the program, phys ed program, because they didn't have one, grades four through six. And we had a ball for a couple of years. We were Batman and Robin running the show. But that's where I got one of the principals in particular gave me carte blanche. It was like my first job. And all of a sudden I'm an athletic director. I'm a teacher. Purchasing all the equipment, you know, for his school, and in the public system, you had to go through bids and stuff like that. So it was a great experience and good background, and made it a lot easier for when I did eventually come here and become athletic director. I already had that.
So you had to tell Tubby, like, hey, I'm not playing baseball this year. I'm going to, you know, I have this great offer, $80 a month for 10 months coaching. Was it something that, like, you just loved immediately, like the coaching aspect?
Oh, I think so. I think it would have been hard. I always thought it was kind of hard if you were just teaching. And so the idea of teaching and coaching certainly appealed. It was just something that kind of came with the job and the expectations, and gave me a chance also coach at the high school with Bill Cole, with the varsity football team.
When Charles Hutton calls you in 1968, you said yes this time, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
And so why leave William Penn for Wilmington Friends for the second time?
Well, I thought I better not turn him down twice. Okay. But what they were asking is Art Hill, who was the varsity basketball coach, and he was the first middle school principal. And so the first year when they were doing that, he was both. They thought this was too much and he shouldn't be having to do that anymore. So they were looking for a varsity basketball coach, and I guess kind of liked what I had done while I was here. So now it was a case of going back and teaching, not phys ed. I was going to be in the history department, social studies, and but also the idea of being the head varsity basketball coach. Still coach middle school football and do varsity basketball. So that was an opportunity that I thought I really should take that.
And you've been here ever since.
And I haven't been able
I was going to
to
say, and
get rid
and many people who will listen to this eventually when it comes out know obviously you are a legendary football coach and have impacted so many sort of through that. But you were also an athletic director here for a really, really long time.
28 years, I believe it was. The first 5 years I taught in the classroom. And then when I became athletic director, I started teaching phys ed as well. So it was phys ed. And back then, just because you're an athletic director, you also were expected to coach. You did study halls, you did advisees, you did all kinds of stuff. And but I was just doing the boys, and Ellen Millick was a girls' athletic director. And we worked great together.
What was the most important aspect of the athletic directing job?
Well, it gave you an opportunity to put your print, so to speak, on the program. But there were so many facets to it. I mean, what we did back then, we it was purchasing equipment, learning how to do that, and having a design. I always particularly liked that. I liked that part of it. You had to do everything, checking inventory, this and that. And back then, we actually ran a store. We had a resale. The girls had theirs, I had mine. So people would buy sweatshirts or t-shirts or shorts for gym classes. And all that ran through our office. So it was that. And the toughest thing was probably hiring coaches, because you were always fighting the battle of, can we get a coach who's also a teacher? Are they qualified, et cetera? And filling not just varsity, but JV, middle school. And so the toughest thing is filling those spots, and particularly with our budget. That was always about, we were very fortunate. We were able to hire some people over the years that were really good coaches, good teachers. And they were willing to come here, despite the fact that they can make more money somewhere else.
What was the most, because I mean, it sounds like that job, especially then, it was all encompassing, like you're doing the inventory, you're out there from the field, you're coaching, you're hiring coaches. What was the most enjoyable aspect of being an athletic director? Because as you said, it was a job you held for 28 years.
Well, I always enjoyed the parts of, equipment and purchasing and inventory and deciding on what kind of designs a uniform should be, et cetera, like that, And so that was always a good part of it, Putting out brush fires, that's the bad part about it. And the part that people don't see, okay, dealing with all the little things that come up and this and that are kind of like an iceberg. You only see the tip. They don't see what's going on underneath.
Being a successful coach yourself and coaching three sports, I'm just curious, how did you try and help your fellow coaches?
Well, first of all, you got to be a good listener. You got to be willing to listen to what they're saying. But you try to also impart what the philosophy of the school is, how it fits in with athletics. And that was always one of the good thing, that the balance between athletics and academics. And I enjoyed the part that our athletes were involved in multiple things. So many times they were involved in, whether it was the band, the plays. We had great plays back then, Viola Richmond put on, and usually they were athletes. And Violet used to, she'd come to my basketball practice and watch me. She knew nothing about basketball, could care. I didn't know if it was stuffed or pumped, but she would come and observe players and like the, and not only in games and even in practice sometimes, and try to determine who performs under pressure, okay, who handles themselves, etc., things like that. And that was quite interesting. We had a lot in common that way.
That's really, really interesting. Just to like go to a basketball game and see someone under pressure at the free throw line and be like, okay, like you can handle the pressure or you can't.
Yeah,
It's really
no,
interesting.
that was real.
Friends, despite being a smaller school, has seemingly excelled in both boys and girls athletics. And I'm just curious as to why you think that is.
Well, they had successful teams before I came here. They also had some non-successful teams.
Sure.
And but I think for the most part, students came here for the right reasons. They didn't come here just for athletics, I think. And so they were part of this total school function. And I think there was a great school spirit because of that as well. And we had some good athletes and enough support from the administration and there, but it was always balanced. You know, we weren't allowed to go to state tournaments for a long time when they first started. And Charles Hutton, who was a former basketball coach himself, had a bad experience with tournaments up in his school in Rhode Island. And so he thought we shouldn't be gone. But it was a conference decision at the time, and right when we were really dominant, and we became really good in football and basketball and baseball and good in soccer and rest. But there were some good reasons not to participate, but there were better reasons to participate. And now nobody could think about not doing it.
What was it like coaching your son and then also seeing your daughters like succeed as athletes? Just how special is that?
Well, both Julie and Susan would argue that they weren't great athletes. Okay, we understand that part in the beginning. So I never really got to see them play a whole lot because I was busy coaching myself or being an athletic director. So, but I do remember Julie Ellen Millick, they didn't have a goalie and she needed a goalie for lacrosse. And Julie wasn't a fast runner, but she had pretty good instincts and everything. So she became the goal. I felt more pressure watching her play goalie, you know. I remember a big game when they beat Tower Hill. Bix Bush and I were sitting over there watching the game over at Tower Hill, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know. And so they participated. They were good team players. And then Rob was, that was an entirely different story because he was always around the program. I mean, he was a manager, like 6 years old, putting helmets together. And so he just grew up with the program, and I got to see him all the time, you know. And he might say too much of the time sometimes. And so I wound up coaching him in football and basketball. I didn't coach him in baseball.
Reflecting on that, like was that tough?
I think the problem you run into, and many guys run into when they're coaching their sons, is that they think that they then have to be tougher on them than somebody else. I never really bought into that. You treat players differently, but you try to treat them all fair. Okay. You don't have to treat, not everybody's the same. And some people that, you know, respond differently to different types of coaching, and everybody's got a different hot button. So we never discussed it much at home. There were a couple incidences on the field where he and I, I was upset with him a little bit once in football. We didn't go to dinner that night together or basketball, you know, when the thing was white. But for the most part, to me, that was never a problem. But I've seen it be a problem for people. Either they bend over too hard to make it tough on their sons, or maybe they gave the perception of being favored. So to me, that was never an issue.
Who influenced you as a coach, or who were some of your coaching mentors, folks that you like really leaned on and learned from?
Well, I think I was very fortunate because, like many families, we moved from east side of Wilmington at the end of World War II to Newcastle, okay, and wound up at William Penn High School under Bill Cole. So Bill Cole was perhaps the, without a doubt, the greatest influence because we were all in the same building. So from fifth grade on, it's in the same building as the high school and middle school sports and everything. So, but Bill was so far ahead of his time, and that whole experience, and it just so happened that I had great teammates. We had great success in athletics, and the coaches there, besides Bill, guys like Ken Wood, it was a close-knit body. So you had to absorb some of that, and so that played a great part. And then when I came here, Art Hill was a great coach, but also just a great individual who, once again, a different style, but somebody that you would want to emulate if you could. You know? And he was I've always believed that the best teachers would really experience would be better served if they were coaches. And that as an athletic director, I've always thought that you need at least 5 years, you should have at least 5 years experience as a head coach if you really want to get the feel of it. You know, I think it's so important, and so many of our teachers, and even if they weren't real active in coaching, had a great interest in kids' activities, whether it's sports or arts or whatever.
Why do you think that is so important?
Well, they see, I think the best way I can put it is I had a coach one time ask who succeeded me not too long after I stopped coaching baseball. And the guy, he also coached football with me. And, he was having some difficulties relating with kids. And his question to me was, how come I could be stern with him, strict with him, coach hard? But he had a problem. And the only answer I could really give him was the perception that the kids thought he was only interested in them as a player, not overall. You know, and that I think that's important that you have that balance between, okay, what else are they doing? What else are they interested in, et cetera. And you know, we always try to follow the idea that the team concept was more important than the individual, and that the student came before the player as a player. Okay. So I think then is if I were to put it, or I actually had written this down, with the team concept being more important than the individual, the student more important than his role as a player. And that was Bill Cole's philosophy back then. Okay. And I think that still carries. I mean, I enjoy greatly when, you know, our kids are involved. They used to be in the jazz band and they were in the plays and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many what our players are able to do and keep in context. I mean, we see it now today. I mean,
Yeah.
all these years later, you know, they're great singers, they're role play, they're actors, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was so cool to see this fall how many football and soccer players were in the fall play.
Oh yeah.
And just having to balance the, you know, like those times and responsibilities and competing at the, you know, high level state tournament stuff. And then that evening, you know, performing in the play.
In 1968, you became the head varsity football coach. How did that come to be?
1968.
Okay,
So
so
I came here in the full time 66, 67. I coached basketballs the winter of 67, 68, 69, those 3 years. And so Charles Hutton, who was our headmaster, right after the basketball season, we had just had a really successful ending to the season. We weren't allowed to go to the state tournament then, but we Tower Hill was always the last game. We won, and Charles Ketchum, and I was totally, completely relaxed. Boy, we were done. And he walking down the hall, I still remember. And he wanted to meet with me. I didn't have another relaxing day then for years. He said he wanted me to take over football. And the amazing thing was, I had a concept of, I had given up on the idea of coaching football here, varsity. Frank Lafferty was a long time here, and Frank was AD before me and a long time and coached. And I thought, well, we're really doing well in basketball. And we can do, it only takes five guys, it only takes three good ones. Two role players, three really good ones, you can win here. Okay. And be successful. But Charles kind of ruined that. He came in, and so I took Diane, and I knew what I wanted to do right away. And I thought the most important thing was we need to go to football camp. We had students who live across the street, players who live across the street, but we also had players from New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and spread out throughout the state. And when I was a player, Wayne Pant, we were the first school to do this, and Bill had done this, and we went to Camp Taqua, and for a week, and I managed to convince Charles Hutton and Ted Savory, who was head of the upper school. How they let me do it, I don't know, but they agreed. I said, I really think this is important to do, so I took Diane and we went to the Poconos. It's March. There's 2 feet of snow on every field up there. We went from one end to the other end looking at fields. And I finally found one. I said, I think maybe we. And we were the last team in at the Camp Tanalo. And we went from there and we started going to camp. And I thought that was really important for the culture of what we were going to try to do, the team concept and get away and all like that. So we were able to do that for 45 years.
So with 68, that was your last relaxing day, because now you're head football coach. I would imagine you were also really excited about that opportunity.
Oh,
No.
yeah. Oh,
Okay. And
sure.
so what excited you most about, like, hey, I'm a head football coach now?
Well, I think dealing with the players, I always people ask at times, well, why did I stay here? Or how come I stayed here so long? It's kind of a natural thing when you've been around so long. And I always said, well, I liked what I was doing, which was coaching and teaching, because I was still teaching in the classroom then. I liked where I was doing it, the balance at Friends School between academics and everything else and athletics. And I liked the people I was doing it with. The players and the parents. I was very fortunate. We had some very supportive people, and that seemed to embody the whole thing. I liked what I was doing, where I was doing it, and who I was doing it with.
You take over in 1968, and this might be an impossible question to ask for a specific moment, but I guess what was your confidence level going into that, knowing you had been a head coach of other sports previous to this, but also knowing that football, there are just more people, so therefore you have to manage more people, you have various assistant coaches, etc. So yeah, again, maybe an impossible question of asking you to pinpoint when you felt most comfortable and felt that you owned the coaching room as a football coach, but I guess I'm asking you to go down memory lane and try to recall a moment for me.
I think you have to have a vision of what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. And then you need to have people around you who trust that, assistant coaches. And as over the years, we were fortunate to have longtime people. In the beginning, the first year, I had two coaches. Neither one played high school football, Bix Bush and Ron Weiner. Ron Weiner graduated here, went to, was a soccer player, tennis player, went to the University of Penn, came down, first year history teacher here, and we get him to coach football. And Bix was teaching, associate teacher in the lower school, which was all in this building at that time, and had coached basketball with me. But they didn't have football backgrounds, so I had to coach them to be coaches. And I fortunately seemed to have enough way of doing that and let them coach and teach and build their own thing. But I tell you, another turning point was in 1973. I coached the Blue Goal game for the first time, head coach. And that was great because now we're dealing with all state players and guys that are going to, we had a fullback going to play at Notre Dame and Mark McLean from Slazianum. We had another guy, Campbell, who wound up with two Super Bowl rings. We had athletes, big time. But we didn't coach them any differently. And they responded the same way. And I thought, I don't need to go back to William Penn, where I was offered a job, but I don't need to go somewhere else or something. The satisfaction was still the same, no matter who you were dealing with, if you do it the right way, and people are going to respond to that. So that was a big thing that I felt. Okay, we're doing the right thing. We're getting the same response, positive reaction from players, what we're doing, how we're doing it, and so that was good.
Football is just such, there's so much to teach and coach. And I didn't put this on the prep. This is just me sort of, because that turning point moment, like that makes a lot of sense. I can see like that piece clicking. I guess not that any sport is easier to coach than others, but I just feel like there are so many intricate details of football, and you have to have your hands in so many things. For you, like, what was the most important? So the culture piece, super important, process, super important, but from a teaching football, like, what was the most important thing?
I had a guy one time talk about coaches have great charisma, and coaches can be strong in a number of different areas. They don't have to be strong in every area because that's why you have assistants as well. But charisma is real important, and being able to motivate people and this and that. But charisma without substance doesn't work, not very long. Okay. So you got to do your homework. And I just, I don't know. I seem to have an aptitude for understanding the total picture, what works, but not only what works, but why does it work? How does it work, or does it work? That's just as important. And so analyzing that is something. It's just like you have carpenters. Some are better than others. I don't know why. Some are better. Plumbers, some electricians, some are much better than others. Okay. Well, coaches have strengths and weaknesses too, and being able to recognize what you need and what you do and how to work with people. But football is unique because you got so many people involved and so many aspects of it. Basketball, when I coached, and it was pressure because we were always in a tough game. Westtown was in the league and they were strong. St. Elizabeth was in the league and they were strong. We were strong. But we grew. I mean, the first year I coached basketball, we didn't have a player over 6 feet. Harmon was not 6 feet tall then. Okay. And he was overweight. And he was a sophomore. So we go from 8-8, 13-3, 15-1 in 3 years. Okay. And we weren't allowed to go, but we're beating teams that go to the state tournament. We're beating them bad. But we really developed. But lunch could get hard to get down, basketball. And you don't have time, because you're back then you're only we were always, unless we got snow dates, we were playing two games, Tuesdays and Fridays. And Tuesdays were never at night. Yeah, if you're going to play us, it's only Friday night game. We only had a few of those. It was a school thing, so you didn't have any night games during the week or late. But football is a week-long process. And it's in that sense, it's much different, but it's also very rewarding. When you do something that's difficult to do, even as a player, and you see improvement, and you do something that's difficult to do, then you grow from that, you know. So as long as players feel they're getting better, you usually don't have a problem. But you gotta teach. They have to understand why you're asking them to do something.
How important was studying the game and scouting your opponents?
You know, I studied the game and what other people were doing and understood. You know, we didn't run wing T, but believe me, I knew everything about wing T and how to defend it, et cetera. And I was surprised at times talking to some college guys. That's why Delaware always had such an advantage at times early on in the playoffs, that all of a sudden they'd play some team that had never seen wing T, and they had no understanding or concept of it. So I had good teachers. Even in college, of course, we took, you know, understanding principles and offense and defense and special teams and the importance of it. You know, I think we do a good job. Now we do an excellent job of attention to detail and concentrating on what's important and how to do it and how to teach it. You know, it's not so much what I know, it's what I can get across to the kids and players now. It's really sweet.
Wow, I think a lot more coaches should hear what you just said right there.
Yeah,
Switching gears a bit to one of your longest tenured assistant coaches in Bill Harmon, often a man who is behind the scenes. Can you speak just to your relationship as one of your former players, but also your longest tenured assistant, and just how much of an impact that he has had on the football program here at Friends?
well, he's had a great impact. If we go from now back, as a coach, he's had a great impact on his relationship with players and how he teaches. And as the years went on, he gave him more and more responsibility. I mean, no one does a better job technically from in terms of coaching special teams. Now, you know, when we really got into it when he joined us full time. You know, because for years he was up in New York.
Right.
He would come down he would come to camp with us, you know, and things like that. But he was working there. So, but I first met Bill when I first came here part time, and he was in seventh grade. He's one of my seventh grade basketball players. And I remember coming back, kids talking one time and talking about what a great golfer he was. I was like, oh, he shoots par golf. I said, like, yeah, really? He's 12 years old. Come, give me a break. I had no idea how that they were telling me the truth. It turns out to be a great golfer. But and then so I had him back then in seventh grade and football and basketball. But then so I leave for a couple of years and I come back. Now he's a sophomore, and of course he played basketball for me he was a 6'3" center, but he and Bobby Hackett and Neil Vosser were like the three amigos. And we Nick Ellis and Ned Conley. I mean, these were great guys, and we weren't big, but we got better and better. And they made sacrifices. You know, we'd have double sessions during Christmas vacation and stuff. And Nick Ellis, in particular, turned down an opportunity to go to Hawaii over the vacation. His mother calls me up. He's got a problem. The grandfather wants to take the whole family to Hawaii, and Nick doesn't want to go. He wants to stay. Now, our prospects aren't that great that we're going to have a great team. There's no one over 6 feet. We're coming, and he was a junior. And I suggested that, look, I always wanted to go to Hawaii. If Nick didn't want to go, I'll go with him. She was great. I said, I'm not going to tell him not, you know, to go. I'm not going to leave it up to him. But he stayed. I said, are you sure about this? And he says, I'll get there someday. And a few years ago, he came back here and he brought me back a hat from Hawaii. He got there. He
That's
got, but
awesome.
he was adamant about staying here by himself and during the holidays. And that kind of team play and stuff, you know. And but he and Ned were great leaders as juniors, and we had one senior who wasn't a starter or anything. But when I took over, we had lost seven seniors who graduated, including first team All-Stater Dave Smith, who went to Harvard and quarterbacked Harvard. So we were starting from scratch. But Billy, even when he wasn't here, had an influence and always wanted to be part. And he could coach at any level, anywhere. I don't care where it is, different things. And so it just grew over the years, not only as a player coach, but then as a family friend and close. Everybody should have a Bill Harmon. Every coach should have a Bill Harmon and in their program and plan. He's been a role model for so many players as well, not just at Friends School, but throughout,
I remember reading a story about Clark Sanders from the 1973
Oh,
season,
yeah.
and how his selflessness embodies what Quaker football is about. So I was just wondering if you can remember or
Oh,
just share that
there's a
story.
lot I don't remember, but I definitely remember that. We're playing Tower Hill, last game of the season. We're undefeated again. We went undefeated in 72, 73, 74, 75. So we're in the middle, right in the middle of this long winning streak. Weren't allowed to go to the state tournament. Maybe we get beat there. But we had really good teams and we beat good teams. So we're playing Tower Hill, last game of the season, and Clark is sitting third in the state and scoring. And they used to publicize this all the time, scoring leaders. And we only played eight games back then, so his chances of being the state scoring leader are probably slim, but he's got a lot of touchdowns. We scored a lot of points. So we're going down, and it happened to be a game where we jump out ahead, and all the backfield guys, Scotty Reese was a left halfback, and they're all seniors, and he scores a touchdown or two. And Mike Rushton was our fullback, a senior, and he scores, and Clark scores. And I'm not thinking about him being the state scorer. I'm just calling play, and we're down there at the goal line. And all of a sudden, there's a timeout. I didn't call it. And John Reynolds, who was our quarterback, comes over. And he said, "Clark, they want him to score." And I thought, this typified what we talked about in team. It was more important for Clark that they all score, all four seniors score in that game, in their last game, than it was for him to have a chance of being either 3-2-1 state scoring champion. And so we let John score, and they were all happy. But I thought that typified what we were always talking about, the team concept. And we had many players over the years who made sacrifices. Linemen became backs, backs became linemen. What was best for the team usually turns out to be what's best for the individual as well. So, but that was what, no, I remember that well. I thought it was a great example. And
You also mentioned that the 91 team was special to you.
oh God,
So,
yeah.
okay, yeah,
Well,
elaborate.
our numbers were down, and we're going to have maybe like 21 players. And I made the offer to the players. I said, "Do you guys really still want to go to camp?" And kids would all players would always, might complain about camp. Believe me, they wanted to go to camp. The food, blah blah blah, food. So I said, "Do you want to play a bar?" I really thought, "Should we play a varsity schedule?" And oh yeah, I said, "You sure you know what you're getting into?" And we went to camp. So we go to camp, and right away, though, before we even get there in the first week, we got three linemen who get hurt, just pull muscles or what have you. That's not very physical stuff, but we're down. We go to camp, and we've got, at times, we're practicing with 15, 14 guys, and there's only two coaches there, me and Dick Kittle, because somebody, one part-time coach, backed out at the last second. Billy was still up in New York, et cetera. And so now we go, and we're leaving camp. Our quarterback gets hurt accidentally on a drill, and we got a scrimmage with AI DuPont and Concord High School coming up. And I told the coaches that were there, I said, I don't know, we might just have a few plays and have to get out of here. We just play a little defense. And so we go there, and next thing I know, Carby Wise and Malcolm Lease and two of our backs break. I said, well, we'll run a few plays. Boom, long touchdown runs. I said, we're out of here. I told Coach Kasanovich, and I said, guys, you two are going to have a great scrimmage after us, but we got to get out of here. We're down to so few players. We got on the bus, and I said, if we have 11 guys, we're going to play. Our first game was with Northeast High School, and they were a big Division I school. Back then, they're bigger than they are now. And I thought, if we have 11, we'll play the game because there was some doubt whether we're going to be able to play.
Sure.
We dressed 15 guys. We go down there on Friday night, first day of school, and back then. And we go down. We wind up in a tie in the last minute of the game. They're killing us. We can't move the ball at all. But they were so upset that they only had one touchdown. They had touchdowns called back, and they rushed everybody. And our quarterback was our punter, Jamie Jenny. And he throws a pass to Donnie Morton. And Morton was playing with about a pound of tape on his ankle because he had fallen the night before at home and sprained his ankle. And he's limping along. He winds up scoring the touchdown. There's just seconds ago in the game. We don't make the extra point, but we intercept the pass. We kick a field goal, and we just miss under the lights. We come out of there with a tie. So that set a stage. And like I said, we started with 15 guys. We finished the game with 14 because one tackle got hurt. And we had to put in a young man at the tackle. And we said, if we run the ball to the right, you're the left tackle. If we run the ball to the left, you're the right tackle. In the fourth quarter,
Awesome.
we get through. It took 7 weeks for that team to get a loss. We wound up tying St. Elizabeth's, who had a 12-game winning streak. They had just beat McCain and AI by about 40 points each. We wound up getting a tie. So, and then we tied St. Elizabeth's Northeast, and we wind up beating Mount Pleasant somehow. And we got guys playing out of position. So all of a sudden we have this team, and now we're up to dressing 18 guys. And then eventually we get to 21. But it was, and so Kevin Tresolini calls me up and wanted to have a player of the week. I said, no way. We don't have a player of the week. And we were the first ones they named the team of the week. And there's a great picture with, and it was the team. And they took it out here by our old tower where we had the new one. And it was the first one where they made the player of the week was the entire team. And we wound up losing some game, but it took 7 weeks before we lost the game. We had a couple times, two of the greatest ties in the history of football. So that was a great example of a team hanging in there that, despite the biggest player was Jamie, and he was the quarterback. He had been a lineman. We made him a quarterback. He was the only one who could throw the ball.
What was the expectation going into the 1984 season? Was it state championship or
Well,
bust, or is it, very much process oriented? Like, hey, this is a game by game thing. So just, reflecting on like what your expectations were.
we had all the right people on the spot. We were pretty good as the year before and the year before that, and guys came up as sophomores. The players set the tone. Those seniors that year said, we're going to win state championship. Now, part of their motivation was the girls had won a state championship in hockey, right? School bought them jackets. The headmaster at that time had given it and decided the school was going to buy them jackets. Okay. And we used to buy team jackets and stuff, but the kids, they didn't want to order any. We're going to win a state championship. The school's going to buy us team jackets. That was part of the, they took, we didn't have a fancy weight room or anything then. We had some weights down in the South Gym, Neff Gym now, in a closet down there. And one of our coaches, Huey Darty, was living in a warehouse or something, some play apartment. And these guys took the weights that summer. They took free weights and put them in his place and lifted all summer. So they had expectations. And now we wind up beating some good teams. And we don't know, back then, only four teams got picked to go into the tournament. And we're 10 and 0. We're eventually 10 and 0. We don't know if we're getting in. It's that close. The system was crazy then, the point system. So we go in and yeah, we beat a couple St. Andrews teams that were only lost to us. We beat Archmere, who had only lost to us and stuff. So we were, but it was a great mix of Sam Brickley had come back from a spleen operation as a sophomore. He had come off the bench, got permission to play against Tower Hill last game of the season as a sophomore, kicked the winning field goal, and we went 15-14 after being down 14-0, and things like that. So we had a lot of guys who overcame obstacles, and they worked like the devil, and they were very dedicated. And so now I got to break the news to them. We got good news and we got bad news. And the bad news was the school went by, and we had a new headmaster then. Bill Bickley was our interim headmaster. Great. Would coach with me for kind of, but he says, we're not buying jackets. So I got to tell him, we're not buying jackets. Now, the good news was, okay, you're going to buy your own jackets, but we get to design them, not the school. When the school did it for the girls, they had a little tiny thing here, very, very conservative, right?
Yeah.
And so I said, we have this white. Devin's got one that our manager or our trainer back then left here in Harlan, and white one. And so that's where that white jacket came, and we designed them, and they were pretty gaudy, they got it, like they got everything they wanted. So, but they had that picture in their minds. They were going to win state championship. So they had it more than me. I said, you can't plan on that. Let's just go week after week. The good thing about that team was, they never played down. We go undefeated. Newark went undefeated that year in Division One, but they would play up and down. And our guy, whether a team was good or whether a team was bad, we never played down. And boy, that's rare. That's really rare. And so they, and Brickley became state scoring champion. He kicked an awful lot of extra points. And, as well as score touchdowns, but so that was their inspiration and their goal, and anything less would have been a disappointment.
Having two state titles from a football standpoint in school history, 84 and 2022, what, if you can reflect and think, are like the similarities that you maybe see between those two teams?
Consistency, effort, they worked hard, good leadership, good senior leadership. I think you have to, when your most talented players are your hardest workers, you're usually going to be successful. And I, over the years at different times, guys like whether it was a Brickley or a Buccini or Bobby Huckel or so many, I gotta be careful because as soon as I name somebody, you didn't mention me. Oh my God, like the 75 team, those guys never lost. They went 4 years undefeated, and the Fleming and Atkins and that. But when your most skillful players are your hardest workers, you're gonna be successful. And so that was a common thread I think, you know.
You touched upon coaching your son. You also had the opportunity to coach your grandsons. What has that experience been like to just see them play, coach them, have that kind of experience?
Well, somebody one time early on said to me, "Boy, isn't that great coaching your grandsons?" And I said, "It is if they're good players." That helps. Okay, that helps. But you know, and again, I don't think I ever intentionally did anything different with them, you know, that way. Older players will say I mellowed. I saw, you know, and well, you change over the years, and players change. And but as far as the grandsons go, you know, the best way I always describe being a parent versus a grandparent. When the kids were young, when my daughters were really young, and we'd go somewhere, we'd run, or I'd race them somewhere or something like that, you know. As a parent, I never let them beat me. I never let them beat me. I just had it in me. I couldn't. We'd be running just a little bit. You didn't get close, but you're not going to beat me. Or run. As a grandparent, running against the same kid, I always let them win. And that's the difference in my mind of being a parent and a grandparent. A parent, you play a different role. You're pushing them, you're striving them, you want them to be tougher, more disciplined, overcome adversity, all the things. As a grandparent, here, you want some more candy?
Right.
So, but coaching, again, and then it was fortunate, you know, more Rob took over. He could be more of that role that way, you know, and, but I've been fortunate because number one, they all contributed to the program. They were all positive teammates, and you know, and so that was kind of icing on the cake, you know, last year. And but you know, and I always said that team last year, you're never going to see that again. 8 out of 11 seniors were together from first grade in this school. I mean, it's never gonna happen.
Final question, what are you most proud of?
I think when we first started, I remember telling the team, the meeting, we were going to do things a certain way, and we always considered the right way to do it. And if we didn't have enough players to do it, then drop it. There's too much time, effort, money goes into a program if you don't do it the right way. So I think the fact that we were able to consistently over the years do things what we considered the right way.